A landmark trade deal took one step closer to reality Wednesday, and it's moving on without its once star member, the United States. Officials released the final version of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, meant to cut trade barriers among some of Asia-Pacific's fastest-growing economies. The deal was a centerpiece of the Obama administration's so-called pivot to Asia.
South Africa's new leadership has taken a tax gamble. On Wednesday, Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba announced that for the first time in 25 years, the country will raise its value-added tax, hiking it from 14 to 15% as part of efforts to cut the deficit and stabilize debt under new President Cyril Ramaphosa.
General Motors' potential exit from South Korea is piling pressure on President Moon Jae-in. Last week, the company announced it would shut down one of four local factories. Now GM and Seoul are in talks to keep the U.S. automaker from pulling out of South Korea entirely, and some 16,000 jobs hang in the balance. There are also concerns a complete GM exit would send shockwaves down the supply chain, putting a further 140,000 Korean suppliers and subcontractors at risk.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's February 22nd, 2018, 5:10 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. It's Thought Leader Thursday here on the program, and today Chuck Garcia is here from Associated Bank. We're going to be talking about bank fraud and securing our financial information. And a little bit later on in the program, the Chicago president-elect of the National Federal Bar Association will be here to talk with us. They have an annual competition that's going on. It's a civics essay contest, and we'll talk with her about that coming up in our second segment this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are off almost 29 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are flat to negative. Around the rest of the globe, markets in Europe are all lower, with the markets in London off almost a full percent. The same story in Germany this morning. A little bit better news in France, off only about a half a percent. And in Asia this morning, markets are considerably lower as well, with the Nikkei and the Hang Seng off more than a percent. The Hang Seng off almost a percent and a half, down 466 points. And oil this morning trading at $61.31 a barrel, and that is down about 37 cents. Some news that we're following for you this morning, probably breaking since you went to bed last night. A major liberal policy group is raising the ante on the health care debate with a new plan that builds on Medicare to coverage for all, guarantee coverage for all. It's called Medicare Extra for All. The proposal to be released today by the Center for American Progress gives politically energized Democrats more options to achieve their long-sought goal of universal health care. The plan would preserve a role for employer coverage, and for the health industry, employers and individuals would have a choice of joining Medicare Extra, but it would not be required. A Republican-led congressional committee is now demanding records related to first-class flights taken by the Environmental Protection Agency Chief Scott Pruitt. House Oversight Committee yesterday said it had asked the EPA for all documents related to the flights taken by Pruitt over the last year, and asked specifically whether tickets were coach, business, or first class. The EPA administrator has been defending his use of premium class airfare in media interviews, saying security concerns were raised after unpleasant interactions with passengers. He's been taking a lot of heat, the toll up almost over $100,000 in terms of airfare for the EPA chief. It's Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell. We do it for you every Thursday, and we're happy to have Chuck Garcia here. A conversation this morning about bank fraud and also securing our personal information. Chuck, good morning.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Good to have you back. Let's talk a little bit about fraud. Surprised a little bit by reading some of the inner workings of how banks go after fraudsters, and I never put two and two together when I'm not on my computer at home. The bank seems to know that. So they know if I'm signing into my checking or savings account that if I'm at work, I may not be the right person.
It really is amazing where the technology has come today in terms of knowing where people are, what device they're on, whether you're on a tablet, when you're on a mobile phone, whether you're on your PC. So the technology has come a long way.
And talk to us a little bit about how it's helping cut down on the behind-the-scenes costs, because up until a certain point, we think of this being me as the consumer. It's my cost, but banks are the ones that are really paying for some of this fraud in a big way.
Yes, you know, often. So if you're not making a purchase that you intended to make, and somebody hacked your account or got a hold of your credentials, whatever the case may be, 9 times out of 10, the institution is going to cover that because it's something that we all are just on the hook for. Again, anomaly detection is really what you're getting at, though. So if you usually don't buy Legos, okay, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you have this big purchase of Legos, it's going to trigger something that you'll likely get a, are you intending to buy this? It may be a text message or what have you, but the anomaly detection is really what banks are using today, and it's very sophisticated.
Is it based on an algorithm? Is it artificial intelligence doing some of this?
Absolutely, it is.
It's kind of cool because I know the last time that I had a fraud episode with my account, whoever made the purchase was in Australia, and my bank knew right away I was not in Australia.
Correct. Yeah, I had a car repair recently from London, and I wish I was in London, yeah. But...
but part of this, too, and I guess the term for it is called friendly fraud. This is another avenue that banks are going after. This is the kid who buys concert tickets and tries to pull one over on the bank. Hey, I didn't order those tickets. Talk to me a little bit about going after friendly fraud.
It's a dicey one. So I'll give you a personal experience. Actually, I have a young son who does like Legos, mm-hmm. and he thought he was going into I Like This on Amazon. Well, he liked it a lot because he was buying it, just didn't know it. In that case, we could have really gone back and say, hey, we didn't order these. In our case, we actually said, look, mistake. We need to return as many of these as we possibly can. Many people will, though, use that as an avenue. Maybe they'll use something, maybe buy a suit for a couple of days. Say, I didn't use this thing. And so banks do go after that. It's difficult, though, in the sense that I want you as a customer. Okay, so if I want your credit card, then it's a difficult one. If it's a one-off, banks will often absorb that. If it's a frequent occurrence, that's a whole different story.
The story that I'm referring to that I saw specifically was in a banking journal. They talked about the kid who bought concert tickets and said, oh, I didn't do that. And then I guess somebody from the bank following up from the fraud department saw that he had posted them on pictures on Instagram.
There are several stories like that. It's not the smartest criminal, but yes, exactly right.
Right. Then there's the dark web, and I have to tell you, I don't understand this at all, where the information that's flowing around on the dark web somehow is accessible and people can find credit card numbers. And is that some area that we should all be aware of?
Absolutely. And, you know, while we all try to secure our credentials, I think, you know, I think of myself again, I know I've been on a phone and I've given my information over the phone. Well, some people can record that. The dark web, as you know, they actually buy and sell credit card information, and it's very sophisticated and it's very frightening. So really keeping track of your account, looking at your billing statements, being judicious with how you save your credentials is really important because that information is out there.
There's news today about the investigation into Equifax, where the House investigators who are looking into it, they've asked Equifax to extend the credit protection for another couple of years because they think that the people who stole this information from 145 million Americans, they're lying in wait, waiting for time to pass.
That's a very frequent situation, whether it's a corporate or, in this case, an individual. They're very patient. You know, they'll be monitoring what you're doing, and if there isn't sufficient money in your account, for example, they'll move on to the next person. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, they're very patient, and they have a lot of information to be able to draw on.
It's a little bit concerning that it seems like that whole story has faded from the headlines, but it's something that, as we've talked about before, we need to be aware of for the rest of our lives, don't we?
Absolutely. We all have to be diligent.
Let's talk a little bit about eBay and PayPal. This has been a rocky relationship over the years. Why is eBay dumping PayPal?
Well, I think in the case of an eBay, and I think you'll see it with other online providers, a Walmart, for example, Amazon, I think they're going to find their own channels where they can keep that in their own house, make more money, manage that information, manage the flow of client information, because it's incredibly valuable, not just the payment mechanism, but the information they can garner even more than they have today. And so I think you're going to see many of these be much more closed loop within in their organizations. The technology is pretty incredible, and a lot of the startups really give them a leg up, and they can move very quickly with these.
Is that the case with this Dutch company that I've never heard of? I think it's called pronounced Adyen or Adyen.
Yes, it is.
They're a little bit more advanced than PayPal.
Advanced, smaller too. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have the clout that a PayPal now does. PayPal on its first origin was, you know, they're like everybody else, they're trying to crack into the business today. They have a lot of clout. So pricing power is also a differentiator in these new companies.
It kind of brings to mind, though, that as we see this landscape changing, there's so many different platforms emerging. Which one, how do we know when we're using one that is worth our trust?
I think you have to look at the underlying organization. So is it a trusted bank? Is it a trusted Visa, MasterCard? You know, the bigger names, you have to really draw on those. Now, a lot of the younger generation is moving a lot of money using, you know, the Venmos, mm-hmm. and then the newest startup, which I probably don't even know is out there. I think people have to be very careful with who they sign up with, what they're signing up on, and really where the liabilities lie, both from the transaction and their information.
One of those companies is called Zelle, or one of the platforms is called Zelle. It seems like I'm seeing that now every day when I see a bank ad.
Absolutely. No, Zelle has become very mainstream.
And it is to explain it to us. How does it work? Is it just like the Venmo?
It really is. Yeah. And many of these operate very similarly. They'll each have their own twist because they've devised something with these new fintechs that's something that's unusual or catered to a specific industry, too.
I know PayPal took a big hit when eBay said it was dumping them. Is PayPal in danger of going away? Because it seems like one of the more common platforms.
I don't see that happening anytime soon. I think they'll find a new niche to crack into. And all of these entities, once they get to that size and have that scale, they're looking to broaden themselves out. I don't see PayPal being in jeopardy.
Let's talk a little bit about what is happening at Associated Bank these days. The company announced recently a $1 million investment in women's business and especially small business. It's a business initiative. Tell us about it.
Well, it's really one of the things I'm really proud of the organization, and it really is oriented to helping women and minority businesses too. Open businesses, help them manage their money, help them create opportunities where they can not only just open the business, but grow their businesses. How can they maximize profits for themselves? It's a great opportunity. It's not just a giveaway of money, but really a consultative approach with helping businesses grow, but helping them with their finances as well.
And I know Wisconsin is, there's a lot of news with Wisconsin recently. We've got in southern Wisconsin, the Foxconn plant. We hear about all these big things, but talk to us a little bit about the smaller things that are going on there.
Well, I think what happens too, when you get these big things, you get the small companies that are the offshoots of, okay, maybe Bob's Diner, okay, that's across from Foxconn. All of a sudden, that's a thriving business. And so I think you get a lot of entities that will grow off of those major industries. And that's part of what the whole general plan is when they put out those kind of tax incentives, is we have to be able to create adjunct new businesses and create different jobs, businesses, et cetera, for smaller companies take advantage of these larger organizations.
And that is coming probably in the next couple of years as we see Foxconn start to go into that area. They're going to need all kinds of stuff to help them operate there.
Yeah, I frequently drive the Chicago to Milwaukee corridor, and as you drive up there, all the new things along the way already springing up, it's pretty amazing. So I think it's already beginning to take hold, and I think it will just continue to grow.
Any other trends that are going on in your world that you want to share?
Well, you know, interest rates continue to be a hot topic, not just in our bank, but in the industry as a whole. I think we all believe in the next March meeting, rates will go up again. And, you know, whether it's two more or three more in the remainder of the year remains to be seen. But it's a general belief that rates will continue to rise during the remainder of this year and likely into next. Thankfully, the economy continues to look strong. Consumer confidence remains high. Obviously, the market took some crazy swings in the last 10 days, but I think that's to be expected, too. When you have such a high run-up, there's going to be volatility. And so I think the trends seem to be very positive overall.
Any yellow alerts or red alerts on the horizon? I know we're seeing inflation going up. Is that something that we need to watch out for?
I think we do. I think you see little spots of inflation, too. You know, maybe gas went up for a while. Now it's back down. So I don't think, you know, inflation at the rate that we're seeing today shouldn't be a red flag, but sure, it's something to look out for.
The expansion that we've seen started after the 2008 crash is now, what, it's 9 years almost. Expansions don't really last this long, so the fact that we're still going is amazing.
It is. I think something that adds to that, too, is it was not a tremendous run-up. Okay, now the market's run-up, obviously, compared to where it first started in that, but we haven't seen, you know, 4%, 5%, 6% growth. It's been a pretty steady basis. So unusual on multiple fronts. Long in the tooth, certainly, but very, very modest growth. Although we are seeing much, much stronger growth with the tax changes and so forth in the coming year. That seems to be a positive indicator.
I know with you and other thought leaders, we've often asked the question, is it possible that we could ever see something like that crisis happen again? Do you think that there are enough safeguards put in place that we won't, or should we never say never?
I would never say never. You know, you see, you listen to the radio and you hear some of the advertisements for some of the mortgages, and I kind of scratch my head and go, wow, I think I heard that before. Yeah. And so I think our memories are too short that you can never say never. I think we need to continue to be cautious. One of the things I think that consumers and companies need to be very cognizant of is consultative approaches with your bank, not taking on too much debt, not getting too far ahead of yourself. I think we all have to take a lesson from that.
One of those ads I heard yesterday for a very small organization was, hey, your house could be your bank account. Right, whenever I hear that, I always get nervous.
I think we all should.
Yeah. Chuck, always good chatting with you. We'll see you again next month.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Chuck Garcia is the Director of Commercial Deposits and Treasury Management at Associated Bank. He's our thought leader today. Thought Leader Thursday happens every Thursday here on The Opening Bell. You can also listen to our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the Opening Bell page. And follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And you can head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to learn more about our thought leaders and listen to more content there as well.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. A plan to build a high-speed Hyperloop transit system from Chicago to Pittsburgh with a stop in Columbus is taking another step forward, and it's the second Midwest Hyperloop route to take shape in the last 6 days. An Ohio planning group announced it's launching a $2.5 million initiative to explore the feasibility of a 750-mile-per-hour transit system that could get riders from Chicago to Pittsburgh in less than 50 minutes. Chicago-based Uptake, a fast-growing predictive analytics startup, announced it has hired Ganesh Bell as its next president. Bell was a top executive at GE and the company's first-ever chief digital officer. And a new co-working space is coming to Fulton Market. San Francisco-based Vault will open its second U.S. co-working space in September after signing a 20,000-square-foot lease on West Fulton Street. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:40 now. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. There's a civics essay contest getting underway. It's being sponsored by the National Federal Bar Association. We're happy to have with us the Chicago President-elect Maria Vathas this morning. Maria, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We were sort of catching up before you. We started the interview this morning. I was assigned to the federal building. I covered the federal courts for a long time, so I feel like we have a little bit of in common.
Yes, we do.
It's a wonderful place to be in the federal building, in the federal courts. There's always lots going on, but the idea that there would be a civics contest to get kids more involved is sort of a cool idea.
Absolutely. We're very excited to be doing this for our second year. This year's topic is, what does equal protection mean to students? And we are partnering with the Federal Judges Association this year. We're really honored to have that partnership, and we're excited to be having this essay contest for high school students around the nation. And it's our second year. Last year, we had a different topic. This year, it's the 150th anniversary of the Equal Protection Clause. So we thought it would be appropriate to focus on it.
And so this is a written and video contest.
Absolutely.
Tell us about that part of it.
Yes. So we are accepting written submissions between 500 to 1,000 words, or essay submissions between 3 to 5 minutes. And the video submissions can be multiple students. It can be 1 to 3 students.
The time has really changed. I remember when I was in high school, it was just written, but now everything's video and multimedia, isn't
it? Yes, absolutely.
Tell us about the Equal Protection Clause. I know there are a couple of cases that highlight this over the years, but what specifically would you like to hear from students about this topic?
Sure. So we want to hear about how students are viewing the Equal Protection Clause's impact on their lives, particularly with respect to their experiences in high school and college admissions, graduate school admissions. We are interested in seeing their perspectives on how the Equal Protection Clause impacts race, gender, and religion.
This has been in the news recently because there, you know, is all kinds of stuff going on across the country about this very thing. I know we've had the conversation about transgender bathrooms. Mm-hmm. There's a conversation about whether or not the protection clause should cover sexual orientation. These are all issues that affect kids every day, and I bet you're going to hear from kids on these topics.
Absolutely. I actually already have a stack of essays, which is amazing because usually most of them come in at the deadline, mm-hmm. which is February 28th at 11:59 p.m. Pacific time. So I expect to get a flood that day.
And this is the series, folks, because when the federal judiciary puts a stamp on something, it's the deadline, right? The hard and fast
That's
deadline.
That's right. Absolutely.
Are there cases over the years that we can talk about that sort of highlight the importance of the Equal Protection Clause?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So one of the famous cases is Brown versus Board of Education. It's a 1954 case, but it's still one of the seminal cases everybody in law school learns about that basically talks about racial segregation in public schools. So, you know, I would expect a lot of the essays and video submissions to focus on that case.
I think everybody, that when you say that out loud, everybody knows what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing that in a society where a lot of us don't pay attention to what goes on in the courtroom,
yes.
That people know these titles, that they know these cases because they're so big.
Absolutely. It impacts daily life. So I think it is great that, you know, we're bringing awareness to the community about it.
That was a 1950s case, but there is a case recently, just in 2017, that was decided on this, wasn't there?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Andrew versus Douglas County School District. So this clause in the Constitution is still alive, and it's still being used and decided on a daily basis, I bet.
For sure. I mean, both in case law, but also I think, as we can see in the news, you know, daily life can be impacted as well.
The video and contest, the video and written essay, there are a lot of rules. There, you can go to the fedbar.org to find them. What is the most important of those, do you think?
Well, I think we really want the students to focus on originality. We, you know, no plagiarism or anything like that. So I think that's very important. And, you know, just keep in mind that we definitely have that deadline, so we can't accept submissions after February 28th.
Tell us a little bit more about what you do at the FedBar. Who is involved, and why do you exist? Why does your organization exist?
We are a group of lawyers and federal judges, and basically we have this wonderful bar association, and we all work together to give back to the community. We also are networking. We also have continuing legal education programming. So we do a lot of great things. And it's been my honor to be involved since the beginning of my career.
Yeah. So you would see what attorneys that practice regularly in the federal courts?
Yes.
Those kinds of folks. And mm-hmm. then the judges who were involved as well.
Yes.
In recent weeks and months, we see a lot going on with federal courts involving
the special counsel investigation. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised that I hear a lot of people paying more attention to that than I would have thought. I mean, I hear people talking about indictments and superseding indictments. Is it a good thing that we're seeing all of this unfold in terms of us learning more about what happens in the courtroom?
I think that it is. I think that it's important as citizens for all of us to be aware of these, of civics and these sorts of issues. I think that it's one of the wonderful things about our country that, you know, we have these laws in place and that we all have the ability to be aware of them.
Mm-hmm. How are the courts, federal courts, coming along with cameras and having that sort of access? Because I would bet that given what's been happening, that there would be an audience for that.
I'm sure. Well, you know, courts have rules on that, and the marshals will certainly enforce them.
Yeah,
so
that's true. I know some state courts, Illinois, have started having cameras and microphones in the courts, but the federal courts have been not fast to pick up on that.
Mm-hmm.
But there would be an audience there. Most of us hopefully will never have to be in a courtroom.
Right.
But what? How would you brag about the federal court system?
I think the federal court system is very well run. I think the judges care. I think they have busy caseloads, but yet they do an amazing job. So it's really, I love practicing in federal court. I think it's a great place to be.
You mentioned the advocacy part of this. Sometimes the day doesn't end in the courtroom, does it? The attorneys, the judges, everybody who's involved goes out and works in the community, too.
Absolutely. And that's our Bar Association focuses on that, thanks to Judge Newman. He's actually the one who got us started. And also Sherry Mecklenburg. She's an assistant United States attorney. She started our national community outreach project.
So, again, tell us the deadline again for this and what you want to see in terms of these essays.
It's Wednesday, February 28th at 11:59 p.m. Pacific time. So it's coming fast.
Right.
And we just want to see, you know, originality, and we want to hear from the students' hearts.
And we should tell people that there is a prize for this, right?
Cash prize, actually.
Big money.
Yes, $1,000 to each first place winner in the essay category and the video category, $500 for second place, and $100 for third place, and also a trip to the Supreme Court for the two first place winners.
Very cool. And I'm guessing this will be judged by judges, actual federal judges, or no?
Yes, I believe they will be assisting with the judging, which is amazing.
Very nice. Well, Maria, it's good of you to be with us this morning. Best of luck. We're going to link out more information to the contest. And perhaps when some of the winners are in, we can touch base with you again to see what they did to win.
That would be great. Thank you.
Maria Vathis with us this morning, Chicago President-elect of the National Federal Bar Association.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are flat to negative this morning as we head toward the opening bell at 8:30 Chicago time. S&P and NASDAQ futures also flat, but pointing in the upward direction. Crude oil is at $61.41 a barrel. Now the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we take a look at the schedule of Secretary of Agriculture's Sonny Perdue, it's another day of travel. But this is a short trip across the river to Arlington, Virginia, where he will be the keynote speaker at the 94th annual USDA Agricultural Outlook Forum. Watched by traders and producers around the world, because it will give us an idea of what we can expect in the crop year. That is, if we have normal weather. But speaking of weather, Argentine weather continued to impact the market yesterday. One story from that country on Reuters said Argentine soy and corn faced the worst case drought scenario. So that sent soybeans higher yesterday, up 7.5 cents. Corn rode along enough to end the day unchanged, and wheat settled down 1.75 cents a bushel. Then as we look at the livestock trade yesterday, the largest daily loss in nearly a month for live cattle futures yesterday, pressured by profit-taking and weaker trades in the cash cattle markets in this country. Feeder cattle fell nearly 2% in the trade yesterday at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Well, we're halfway through National FFA Week, and we hope that you're paying attention to the contributions that the young members of FFA make to agriculture and to our way of life. Coming up next week, Commodity Classic, and that will be in California. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Thursday. It's February 22nd. A couple of things on the schedule today. We'll get the leading indicators at mid-morning this morning. Also today, Freddie Mac, the mortgage company, releases this week's average mortgage rates. Some events on the calendar include a conservative political action conference, the USDA Outlook Ag Outlook Forum, and in terms of earnings, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise and Chesapeake Energy among the big ones earnings today on this Thursday, February 22nd. A couple of other stories that we're watching for you this morning before we leave you today. The chicken salad controversy at Fairway stores is continuing and expanding. The federal government recalling chicken salad made by the Iowa Processing Company and distributed to Fairway stores across several states, including Illinois and South Dakota and Iowa. The U.S. Department of Agriculture's Food Safety Inspection Service issued the recall yesterday. And Walmart is launching a new online home shopping experience in the coming weeks that'll let shoppers discover items based on their style. The move is the first glimpse of Walmart's broader effort to redesign its site with a focus on fashion and home furnishings. The overhauled website will be launched later this year and will mirror how people shop for different items. Later this week, Walmart will offer a dedicated space for Lord & Taylor fashions as part of a partnership agreement signed with the department store's parent company, Hudson Bay.